It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back, everybody. It's good to have you here today on the show, Frances Jackson. Frances Jackson is an attorney who specializes in disability law for those seeking veterans disability benefits as well as Social Security disability benefits. A founding partner of Jackson McNichol, he most recently appeared as a guest of Ben Glass on the Consumer Advocate Show discussing benefits for veterans and Social Security disability benefits and how his practice allows him to make the difference in the lives of people facing these disabilities. Frances has been featured on NBC, CBS, ABC, and Fox network affiliates around the country. He's also been quoted in USA Today and is listed in Cambridge Who's Who. Frances was honored in by the National Academy of Bestselling Authors with a Quillie Award for his contribution as a joint author to the best-selling book Protect and Defend, where he wrote about protecting one's rights to veterans' disability compensation. In 2017, Mr. Jackson was inducted into America's Most Trusted Lawyers for his outstanding work in disability law. As always, for more information, please visit veteransbenefits.com, veteransbenefits.com. Frances Jackson, welcome back.
Thanks so much, Bert. It's always nice to be here with you.
Thank you, man. And I wanted to jump right into this and talk about I understand that there was a recent Supreme Court case dealing with veterans issues, and I wanted to see what you could tell us about that.
Sure. Interesting split on the court, but the case is called George versus McDonough, and Kevin George is a gentleman who joined the Marines in 1975 and made a claim for benefits, which was turned down and persisted and was later granted. But the issue in his case is this. The veterans benefits law has a provision that says that if the Veterans Administration processed the case in a way that was inconsistent with the facts or the law as they existed at the time that it processed the case, then there's a provision for reopening that case and getting benefits back to the date that they got it wrong. So in Mr. George's case, the issue was that there was a particular regulation which arguably was correctly applied at the time. Many years later, the courts decided that the regulation was not a valid regulation, that it didn't properly accomplish what Congress had intended in the statute that authorized the regulation.
Gotcha.
So Mr. George went back and said, gee, guys, you should reopen my prior application under clear and unmistakable error because this regulation was improper and it's now been correctly interpreted. And if it had been correctly interpreted and applied back then, I'd have gotten benefits. And the court said, no. Essentially, the court said, look, the fact that someone figures out later that the regulation wasn't right and says that the regulation should be, well, the statute underlying the regulation should be interpreted differently or the regulation should be interpreted differently is not something that we're going to let you go back on. They said that clear and unmistakable error requires that either the law as it existed then was not correctly applied, or the facts as they were known then were not correctly applied. His claim, of course, was about the law, the regulation. And what the court said was, look, we're not going to let you take advantage of the fact that 20 years later the regulation was interpreted differently than when it was applied in your case and go back and get 20 years worth of benefits. If you thought the regulation was incorrectly applied back then, you should have raised it back then. We're not going to go behind the interpretation of the regulation. But it's a very interesting split on the court. The majority opinion was written by the new justice, Amy Coney Barrett. And she said that, you know, an agency changing the interpretation of the law or regulation wasn't a clear and unmistakable error. The VA concedes that the regulation was initially wrong, but that doesn't change the basic principle saying that the decision wasn't wrong under the law as it existed then. She wrote that the correct application of a binding regulation does not constitute clear and unmistakable error at the time the decision was rendered, even if that regulation was subsequently invalidated. So that's where the majority came out. Now, right. The interesting part is that one of the Trump appointees, Justice Gorsuch, said that's not right. He said that the VA's failure to provide Mr. George a new hearing based on the new interpretation was what he described as inexcusable. And he said that the majority opinion was likely to have wider-reaching implications. And he said that no agency should be immune when making decisions that are incorrect. He said that even if an agency's unlawful regulations bind its own employees until a court says otherwise, that doesn't mean its decision applying those regulations to others is error-free. So anyway, the long and short of it was that Mr. George lost, lost 6-3, but it was interesting to those of us who were interested in the mechanics of the law that Gorsuch was one of the dissenters, and also there was a separate dissent by Justice Sotomayor who said that agencies shouldn't be able to rely on their own mistakes to protect them from further claims. And her phrasing was the mere fact that the board relied on a plainly invalid regulation should not shield its final decision from review based on clear and unmistakable error. But sadly for Mr. George, that's where it came out. So, for those
so it didn't
who,
really help him.
Didn't help him. He lost, he had lost at the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims and at the Federal Circuit, and took it all the way to the Supreme Court and still lost. So, for those who are interested, the case is called George versus McDonough, and the Supreme Court decided it on June 15th of this year. You can find it on the internet. It's pretty readily available, but. It was a disappointing decision, not a surprising decision, but a disappointing decision from the point of view of those of us who practice veterans benefits law, because had it gone the other way, it would have provided relief for a number of veterans who were not sophisticated enough to know to challenge these regulations back when they lost and only later got attorneys and looked at why the regulations were bad. So it's an unfortunate result, I think. But as you know, there's an old saying that the Supreme Court is not final because infallible, but infallible because final.
I had not heard that. That's hysterical and unfortunately true.
That's yep,
terrible.
That's the way it was.
Yeah. All right. So not to show my utter ignorance to everything you just said, and just to, I guess, dumb it down for us who are not as savvy with the law, what does this mean moving forward? What does this mean for veterans or for your types, for your clients? Does it mean that, you know what, I'm not even a guess, just to be transparent, what does it mean going forward?
Sure. What it means, Bert, is that lots of folks who got turned down in the past are stuck with those denials. As you and I have talked about in veterans law, the good news is that pretty much the way that system is structured, if you got turned down improperly in the past, you can go back and ask for benefits currently. But what this case was about was trying to get not only the benefits currently, but back to the point in time when the claim was originally turned down. Don't hold me to this because I'm doing this off the top of my head, but my recollection is that in Mr. George's case, he was turned down like 20 years ago. So it would have been 20 years of back benefits had he prevailed at the Supreme Court, but he didn't. And
gotcha.
what it really underscores is that if you bring a claim for veterans benefits and get turned down, you really need to pursue that claim, appeal it, raise the impropriety in the regulation in his case at the time. And what is sad is that a lot of veterans over the years have gotten turned down and were not sophisticated enough to understand that they should appeal. We see these cases all the time where someone comes to us and they've been turned down often years ago, and people will tell them, oh, don't appeal, it takes too long, file a new claim. Well, you can file a new claim in most cases. You have to have new evidence, but you can usually come up with something that will fit within the scope and let you reopen the claim. But the problem is, say you made the claim in 2018. It's now 2022. You've been
right.
turned down. If you don't appeal and you just file a new claim, your claim for benefits starts today when you file the new claim. If you appeal and you ultimately win, you get benefits back to 2018. And that's 4 years worth of benefits that have just gone down the tube, if you will, if you reapply rather than appealing. And it's unfortunate, but we get cases just literally all the time where that's what's happened to people. They don't understand the importance of appealing, and they reapply, or worse, they get discouraged and just give up and don't come back to it for years. And, you know, it's unfortunate, but it happens a lot.
Yeah. And you'll hear this a lot, and sometimes you'll hear it a lot from like personal injury attorneys that advertise on TV, where they'll say things like, hey, your case has a limited time, or your case could expire and then you get nothing. And this is one of those things where, you know, the average person doesn't realize that their claim, it does or can expire if you don't, as you said, keep it moving, and you have to go through the process, even though it's, in some cases, can be horribly long. And I know that you and I have talked about sometimes your clients become impatient because, you know, they've been waiting 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and they're going through this process, and you know, they're ready to give up because they don't see the light at the tunnel.
It's true, Bert. It's sad how slowly these cases move. You know, and what happens a lot, I mean, I just hear this over and over from clients, is they apply, somebody else applies, the other guy gets granted, they don't get granted, and they, you know, either say, well, he got granted and I should have been granted and I don't understand why the VA turned me down. Well, obviously the cases weren't exactly alike, or one of you wouldn't have got the results you got. But the point that you were making, I think, is really an important one. So it is so sad that so many people get turned down and just don't understand the importance of pursuing the claim. You know, the VA system is actually relatively forgiving comparatively. Unlike the personal injury case, you often can go back and start a new claim at least, whereas with a personal injury case, if you let the time expire, you can never go back. But the VA system is more forgiving in that way. You probably can pick up the claim later, but it just, you will lose out on the benefits that you would have gotten in the interim had you pursued it. That's the big loss. And for some people, that adds up to a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Let me ask you this. I know that you recently mentioned that the VA is trying to automate certain claims. Can you provide any kind of update on this?
Yeah, Bert. The area where they have made the most progress, you and I have talked about the fact that the spouse of a deceased veteran or the child under 18 of a deceased veteran can apply for benefits, and they go by the name of dependency and indemnity compensation benefits. Not surprisingly, that gets shortened to DIC, but it's a benefit that's intended to help the surviving spouse to replace the income that the deceased veteran would have provided to the spouse or to the child, as the case may be. And when you put one of those cases in, the VA, of course, reviews it and acts on it. And what's special about those cases is there are a couple of categories where the grant is essentially automatic. If the now deceased veteran has been at the 100% level with the VA or getting total disability based on individual unemployability, TDIU, for a period of 10 years or more, then an entitlement to DIC benefits for the surviving spouse or the child under 18 is automatic. There's also another rule that says that if you've had 100% benefits since you left the service, if you were sufficiently disabled when you left the service, usually as a result of a catastrophic injury, that you've gotten 100% benefits from the time you left the service up until death, then again that award is automatic. So,
gotcha.
What the VA has been able to do, it generally takes them, when you're talking about doing it in paper, about 4 months to process an application for DIC benefits, even if it's one of these automatic categories. But with the automation, if the person applies and they're able to fill in all the information required on the form and supply the death certificate, the VA can now turn those around in about 4 hours in their automated system, which,
wow,
as you can appreciate, is a huge improvement. The unfortunate part is that most DIC benefit claims require proof that the death was service-connected, because they don't fall into these automatic grant categories. And so those tend to take the same length of time as any other VA claim. But there are these special categories, and the VA has been able to automate them and to really, really turn that around. I mean, they can probably pay the person as quickly as you can get the death certificate through the state bureaucracy in whatever state you're in. So it's really a big deal for those folks. Unfortunately, that's not a large number of the claims yet, but it does show, A, that there is potential, and B, that the VA really is working on it and making progress. So those are both encouraging things. I'm hopeful that within the next few years, there will be a large number of types of benefit claims that the VA is able to process quickly. You know, the classic claim where the issue is that they're contesting whether in a DIC claim, whether the cause of death was connected to service, of course, is never going to be quick. But there are a lot of these that can be done pretty quickly, and they are actually making strides toward that, which is nice to see.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely. Speaking of nice to see, I want to talk about the PACT Act. We had recently talked about the PACT Act in the Senate, and any updates on that? Anything happening there?
Yeah, Bert. It they were trying to do it for Memorial Day, and they didn't make that, but they did finally pass it in mid-June by 84 to 14, which is overwhelming in the current hotly disputed Senate on everything. So it's very impressive that it passed with such a high margin. And so that is now back to the House, and one of two things has to happen. Either the House passes the exact language adopted by the Senate, in which case it's automatically done and the bill goes to the president, or if the House is unable to agree on the exact language used by the Senate, then it goes to a reconciliation. And there's a committee of people from the House and from the Senate who get together and work out whatever the differences are between the House version and the Senate version, and then that has to be voted on by both. But it looks to me like the House is probably going to pass the Senate version, there's a real chance that this is going to get signed by the president. In this legislative session, within the next few weeks, so we will see. The president stepped up and commented that he was very pleased to see that this had been done, and it's going to move forward. He, in his comments on the act, he commented that he wanted to see Congress make sure that veterans and their families and caregivers who were impacted by these various toxic exposures got the benefits and health care they deserved, and he was very pleased to see that the Senate had overwhelmingly passed the bill. And one of the things that is particularly of interest for a lot of my clients. What this bill does, in part, it does a lot of different things, but in one very important part, it extends the presumption that certain diseases are caused by Agent Orange to folks who were exposed to Agent Orange in Thailand, Laos, and Cambodia. And it's particularly important for the people who served at the Thai air bases, because large numbers of U.S. Air Force folks were stationed in Thailand at the Royal Thai air bases, several different Thai air bases. And for those folks, even though they have all the classic Agent Orange diseases, whether it's diabetes or cancer or whatever particular presumptive disease you're talking about, they have been consistently turned down by the VA for benefits on the theory that the only folks in the Thai bases who were truly likely to have been exposed to Agent Orange were the folks whose job was perimeter security, because they were out on the edges of the base where the Agent Orange was sprayed most heavily. But there are a lot of Air Force folks who were clearly exposed to Agent Orange. I mean, you know, this stuff is sprayed and it blows around, and you know, it's not like you can say, well, if you were on this spot, you were exposed, and if you were 12 inches away, you weren't exposed. It just doesn't work like that.
Right.
So this is really a big deal for lots of Air Force vets who've had claims in for years that are now, once this bill is actually signed, are finally going to get the benefits that they've been fighting for a long time. And that's really a big deal for a number of our clients, and I'm sure for many, many more veterans around the country. But that's a piece that didn't get a lot of attention when the bill was going forward, but that's in there. And one of the other major pieces of the bill is expanded benefits and health care for veterans in the Iraq-Afghanistan theater, where the burn pits that we've talked about were so widely used, and all kinds of carcinogens were distributed in the smoke. And I've noticed, and this is completely off the topic of veterans benefits, but I've noticed that over the last few years, there's been a considerable step forward in workers' compensation in a lot of states to provide firefighters with coverage for the cancer-causing chemicals in smoke. And it's the same problem here. You know, a house fire, a building fire, or these big burn pits, they all burn stuff that you shouldn't be inhaling the smoke from. And whether you're a firefighter or you're a veteran in the Iraq theater or Afghanistan, now that stuff just isn't good for you. And the country is finally stepping up and is going to take care of these folks, which is a nice thing to see.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and it just boggles the mind how difficult it is to get the stuff taken care of, because, you know, if you're around some of these chemicals, if you're dealing with smoke from burn pits or a house fire or whatever, you don't have to be a doctor or a scientist or a brain surgeon to say, hey, that could have some negative repercussions being around these chemicals and being around smoke. I don't understand what's so hard.
Yeah, it's one of those things, Bert, that you did notice, I'm sure, that 14 people voted against the bill in the Senate, and they were all Republicans, and they were all against the bill, not because of what it does, but because of the price tag. That's what this stuff tends to come down to, is the price tag. I mean, this bill, they're talking $300 billion for the VA budget this year when you include this and various other things. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. But again, and we've talked about this, you know, they don't seem to have a problem, you know, they don't have a problem using the military for these dangerous operations, and they just have, for whatever reason, don't see they have a problem with paying for the medical bills that are associated with these warlike operations. And I don't know, it just boggles the mind that they think like that. But yeah, it makes total, you know, it's an unfortunate thing, but
it is an unfortunate thing. I mean, you would think. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, finish.
I was just going to say you would think that it would be fairly obvious that if you send people into harm's way, you ought to pay to help them with the results, but. Some people in the Republican Party apparently don't agree with that proposition, which is why they voted against the bill.
Yeah, and I bet you, I'm going to go on a limb here and say 100% of the 14 individuals that voted against the bill did not serve their country in the military.
Right. I think you're probably right about it, although I haven't checked.
All right, let me ask you this. I wanted to check back with you about veteran suicide. This is one of those hot topics, and it's just something that you and I have talked about. Any updates about suicide prevention for our brave men and women?
Yeah, the House has been holding hearings, trying to figure out ways to better deal with this whole problem of increasing suicides among veterans. And the little bit of good news that came out of the hearings in terms of the numbers is that in 2019 there were 6,261 veterans that we know of that died by suicide. And
right.
That certainly doesn't sound like good news, but the good news part of it is that that is a smaller number than 2017 and 2018. That's the good news. But the there was a House fact-finding hearing and testimony by various people who are familiar with the problem, and there are a lot of factors that came to go into this. People talked about financial strain, unanticipated loss of employment, lack of affordable housing, difficulty accessing health care, and that, you know, these are readjustment struggles that a lot of veterans face and just find overwhelming and ultimately give up and commit suicide.
Right.
The other bit of good news in all this is that the Biden administration has proposed a fiscal 2023 budget for the VA that includes $13.9 billion to improve mental health services for veterans and almost $500 million for veteran suicide prevention initiatives. And you and I talked, I think, the last time about the fact that in May of this year, the VA launched a long-term initiative called Mission Daybreak, where they put up $20 million as potential prizes for people who can come up with suicide prevention ideas and programs. So they're really working on it. I mean, they're, you know, I always pay attention when they're willing to put the money where the mouth is, you know, and they're doing that. So I am hopeful that one of the things we're going to see going forward is a reduction in the suicide rates. I there aren't numbers yet for 2020 and 2021, but candidly, I expect that those numbers are going to go up. As you know, the pandemic really was very burdensome for lots of people, and I think the veteran population is going to have seen a significant increase in suicide in those 2 years. But hopefully, now that the pandemic is, if not behind us, at least less invasive and has less impact than it's had, I'm hoping that things are going to improve and that as the VA puts this new money into mental health and suicide prevention, it's going to improve further. But the only way to know that for sure is to wait and see. So that's what we'll have to do.
Sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, you know what? And just finally, I wanted to talk about this because, you know, we just, speaking of Memorial Day, we just passed Memorial Day and we're coming up on July 4th, two of America's most famous holidays. Quickly, give us your take on this. Why is this significant for the what is the significance of those holidays for our veterans?
Well, Bert, Memorial Day actually began in the 1860s, and the official credit is given to a fellow by the name of John Logan, who was a general in the Union Army and headed up a post-Civil War organization called the Northern Civil War Veterans. And in the beginning of May in 1868, he called for a nationwide day of remembrance. The 30th of May, 1868, is designated for the purpose of strewing with flowers or otherwise decorating the graves of comrades who died in the defense of their country during the late rebellion and whose bodies now lie in almost every city, village, hamlet, and churchyard in the land, he said. And so that was actually the beginning of Memorial Day. And a couple of just kind of interesting notes. One of the earliest memorial observances was actually organized by a group of former slaves, freed slaves, in Charleston, South Carolina, about a month after the Confederacy surrendered in 1865. But the Memorial Day, as we know it, became a national holiday in 1971 and is officially to honor all those in the military who died in the various conflicts from the Civil War to the present. The other half of your question, the 4th of July, as we all know, that is a celebration of the birth of our nation. But what a lot of people don't know is that much of our military actually began before Independence Day in 1776. The Army was formed June 14th of 1775, the Navy in October of that year, and the Marine Corps started as the Continental Marines. It was formed by a resolution of the Continental Congress on November 10th, 1775, and started recruiting that day in Pennsylvania. And they were originally created as landing troops for the Continental Navy. Those three branches actually predate the famous 1776 July 4th date. And the Coast Guard is fairly close. They began in 1790. As you know, the Air Force and the Space Force are much more recent. But July 4th is really a special event for veterans who have given their time and often much more than their time to serve the country that celebrates its birthday on July 4th.
Yeah, that's incredible. Hey, you know what? It's amazing that we have forgotten what these holidays represent. You know, unless you're a veteran, unless you've served, unless you have family that served, most people don't know what Memorial Day is about, other than it's a national holiday and they get to stay home or they get to have a party. And the same thing for 4th of July. And these are very, what do you call it? At least for me, July 4th is such a historic thing and such a historic holiday and really I think that sometimes we lose sight of its importance, and the same thing for Memorial Day. So I'm glad that that we were able to talk about that a little bit. Thank you for your I guess brief history lesson on that to help us remember what these holidays are for.
Sure, Bert.
Well, we're out of time. And Francis, I want to, again, say thank you so much. I appreciate the updates. I also appreciate you and everybody there at Jackson McNichol taking care of our veterans, our brave men and women. And as always, it's just a blast to have you on the show. So thank you so much for stopping by.
My pleasure, Bert. It's always nice to have a chance to chat with you.
Thank you so much, and we'll catch you again soon.
All right.
Good stuff there from lawyer Francis Jackson. By the way, save this email, I mean not email, save this website, veteransbenefits.com, veteransbenefits.com. This is what you want to do with it. First of all, if you know of somebody who has served, who maybe is currently in the service, send it to them. Just say, hey, you know, in case you ever have any questions regarding your benefits, check out veteransbenefits.com. And again, maybe, like I said, they're currently active duty, so they don't need any of this information. Or maybe the people that you know have never complained about their disability benefits. By the way, That is one of the things that keeps our people suffering in silence, is that they don't complain. And so just say to them, hey, you may never need any help with your disability benefits, but in case you do, check out veteransbenefits.com. Also, share this episode with them. Share this episode with everyone you know, just so they understand what's happening and the fact that our veterans have to sometimes fight for what was promised to them. As always, my friends, thank you so much for stopping by. It's an absolute honor to serve you guys, and I appreciate your support. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.